The fact that God allowed for the destruction of cities throughout the Holy Land by the Pharaoh, but saved Jerusalem, indicates, the Bible tells us, that Shoshank's assault was meant to serve as a warning to Jerusalem for the future. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 16, The Shoshank Preemption. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. He was the first pharaoh whose name was given in the Bible, and he was not Egyptian. He rose at a time when Egypt's power was on the decline, and, just for a moment, he restored its dominant place in the region. And it is only when we study his story outside the Bible that we can ponder the providential poetry of the biblical tale in which he appears. As we've discussed thus far, Solomon's diplomatic marriages to pagan princesses, first and foremost to a daughter of Pharaoh, spelled spiritual disaster for Jerusalem, allowing paganism to gain a foothold in the city. But it also betokened how weak Egypt had become. For until this point, the pharaoh would have married foreign women, but would never have sent one of his own to the empire of another. But during the reign of Solomon, one pharaoh, who we can deduce from sources outside the Bible was named Siamun, himself a member of the Libyan ministers who had taken over Egypt, felt forced to give not only his daughter to the Israelite king, but also the city of Gezer in southern Israel as a dowry. Toby Wilkinson, in his excellent book, The Rise and Fall of Ancient Egypt, notes how profoundly weak this showed the 21st ruling dynasty of Egypt to be. Quote, Egypt's star had waned, its reputation was in tatters, and there seemed little prospect of a return to the might and majesty of the new kingdom. Yet, he adds, at least one Libyan ruler had other ideas, end quote. And of course, if the might of Egypt was to be restored, then, for the pharaoh that would bring it about, the shame of Egypt's subjugation to the Israelite emperor of Solomon would need to be undone. The name of this pharaoh that would restore Egypt's might would be Shoshank. Yet this pharaoh, as he rose, surely did not know that the manifestation of his might would come at a time when the Lord of history, the God who dwelled in Jerusalem, had seen fit to punish Solomon for all that his marriages had brought about in Jerusalem. 1 Kings 11:11. Wherefore the Lord said unto Solomon, For as much as this is done of thee, and thou hast not kept my covenant and my statutes which I have commanded thee, I will surely rend the kingdom from thee and give it to thy servant. Notwithstanding in thy days I will not do it, for David thy father's sake, but I will rend it out of the hand of thy son. However, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but will give one tribe to thy son for David my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. Most of the kingdom was thus to be taken away from the house of David, and no longer ruled from Jerusalem. Solomon, having received this prophecy, was aware, like Saul before him, that another would arise who would upend the future of his rule, and he therefore sought to kill any potential threat. This threat would present itself from the tribe that would challenge the preeminence of the Davidic dynasty throughout the First Temple period, Ephraim. We are told further in verse 26, And Jeroboam, the son of Nevat, an Ephratite of Tzereda, Solomon's servant, whose mother's name was Tzeruah, a widow woman, he lifted up his hand against the king. And this was the cause that he lifted up his hand against the king. Solomon built Milo and repaired the breaches of the city of David, his father. We are thus informed of a mighty man from Ephraim, Jeroboam, who rebels against Solomon over the matter of the Milo. This Milo is the era between the original city of David and the Temple Mount. And while it is not quite clear what was so problematic with Solomon building up this place, a possible solution can perhaps be discovered in Kings 9:24, where we are told, Pharaoh's daughter came out of the city of David unto her house, which Solomon had built for her. Then did he build Milo. It seems as if the construction within the Milo area was linked to the palace that Solomon had built for his queen, one which loomed over the city. And we are further informed by the biblical discussion of Jeroboam's revolt that Solomon repaired the quote-unquote breaches in the city of David in the process. For the rabbinic interpretation, these breaches in the city of David refer to entrances that were utilized by pilgrims from across Israel visiting the sacred city, entrances that had been walled up in the process of Solomon's constructing an edifice in which to house the pagan princess. According to this approach, Jeroboam's insurrection began in righteous rebellion against the place granted Pharaoh's daughter in Jerusalem. Understanding this lends greater poetic power to a study of historical sources outside the Bible, for it would be the new Pharaoh that would foster Jeroboam's rebellion. The kingdom of Israel's division discussed in the Bible came at the same moment as a changing of dynasties in Egypt. Toby Wilkinson tells us that, quote, near the close of the reign of Pasebachanuit II, control of Thebes had been delegated to a charismatic and ambitious Libyan chieftain from Bast, a man named Shoshank. As great chief of chiefs, he seems to have been the most forceful personality in court circles. Moreover, by marrying his son to Pasebachanuit's eldest daughter, Shoshank reinforced his connections with the royal family. His calculations paid off. After Pasebachanuit's death, Shoshank was ideally placed to take the throne. The chieftain's ascension marked not just the beginning of a new dynasty, reckoned as the 22nd, but the start of a new era, end quote. Meaning, it was marriage that served as the stepping stone for Shoshank's rise to the throne. It was marriage that allowed him to cement his power. And Wilkinson further informs us how Shoshank united a once fragmented Egypt, achieving the subservience of both politicians and priests. Wilkinson tells us that, quote, local bigwigs were encouraged to marry into the royal house to cement their loyalty. And Wilkinson further adds that when, quote, the third prophet of Amun married Shoshank's daughter, the king knew he had the Theban priesthood well and truly in his pocket, end quote. We are now able to begin to understand the irony, the poetic profundity of the political state of affairs that brought about the undoing of Solomon's power. An Israelite empire, a Solomonic domination of Egypt, was made manifest through diplomatic marriages. And suddenly, Jeroboam's rebellion would be fostered by a pharaoh who had himself come to power through marriage. We can now read anew what follows in the Book of Kings, which describes the fleeing of Jeroboam from Jerusalem, from Solomon, as well as the prophecy he receives, and the king of Egypt who harbors the rebel as a fugitive. Verse 29. And it came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem, that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way, and he had clad himself with a new garment, and the two were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and rent it in 12 pieces, and he said to Jeroboam, take 10 pieces, for thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to thee. But he shall have 1 tribe for my servant David's sake and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel. Verse 40 then adds, Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam, and Jeroboam arose and fled unto Egypt, unto Shishak, king of Egypt. And the Book of Kings further informs us in verse 40, Solomon sought therefore to kill Jeroboam, and Jeroboam arose and fled into Egypt, unto Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. This Shishak is, of course, Shoshank, who harbors the rebel against Solomon. And we can imagine the irony that must have struck Solomon in his old age, a new king of Egypt who, himself like Solomon, had used marriage into the Pharaoh's family to claim power, now helps a rebel against Solomon who had originally established his empire through diplomatic marriage. After Solomon died and the throne passed to his heavy-handed son Rehoboam, all the tribes north of Benjamin and Judah, 10 in all, split off from the house of David and proclaimed Jeroboam king. Soon after, Pharaoh Shishak, or Shoshank, restored the dominance of Egypt by raiding the Holy Land. Thus, 2 Chronicles chapter 12 tells us, and it came to pass that in the 5th year of King Rehoboam, Shishak king of Egypt came up against Jerusalem, because they had transgressed against the Lord, with 1,200 chariots and 60,000 horsemen. And the people were without number that came with him out of Egypt, the Libyans, the Sukkims, and the Ethiopians. And he took the fenced cities which pertained to Judah and came to Jerusalem. Then came Shemaiah the prophet to Rehoboam and to the princes of Judah that were gathered together to Jerusalem because of Shishak, and said unto them, thus saith the Lord, ye have forsaken me, and therefore have I also left you in the hand of Shishak. Whereupon the princes of Israel and the king humbled themselves, and they said, the Lord is righteous. And when the Lord saw that they humbled themselves, the word of the Lord came to Shemaiah, saying, they have humbled themselves, therefore I will not destroy them, but I will grant them some deliverance, and my wrath shall not be poured out upon Jerusalem by the hand of Shishak. Nevertheless, they shall be his servants, that they may know my service and the service of the kingdoms of the countries. So Shishak, king of Egypt, came up against Jerusalem and took away the treasures of the house of the Lord, and the treasures of the king's house he took all, He carried away also the shields of gold which Solomon had made. In other words, according to the Bible, the rise of Shishak or Shoshank came about as a punishment for the paganism that had infected Jerusalem. Upon the repentance of Jerusalem's rulers, the city is saved from destruction. Nevertheless, its gold is stripped by the Pharaoh. Thus did Shoshank become the first foreign ruler to shame and subjugate Davidic Jerusalem. He would, of course, not be the last. But Jerusalem at this point was not destroyed, and indeed, in the very monument that Shoshank would set up for himself at his temple in Ipetsut, he described the many cities of the Holy Land that he destroyed, but Jerusalem is not inscribed upon it. The fact that God allowed for the destruction of cities throughout the Holy Land by the Pharaoh, but saved Jerusalem, indicates, the Bible tells us, that Shoshank's assault was meant to serve as a warning to Jerusalem for the future. If Israelite kings, as in the age of Solomon, allowed paganism to infiltrate the sacred city, then an empire could assert itself and assault the capital of Judea, and Jerusalem would not be saved forever. Shoshank's rise as a warning to Israel and a divinely ordained punishment to Solomon is highlighted by another fascinating fact, unmentioned by the Bible, but revealed in Egyptian history, which is that the power of this pharaoh waned almost as soon as it was made manifest against Jerusalem, and the monuments to his might, the celebrations of his victories, went uncompleted. As Toby Wilkinson further tells us, quote, "Yet if all this sword-wielding and flag-waving was supposed to usher in a new era of pharaonic power, Egypt was to be sorely disappointed. Before the work at Ipetsut could be completed, Shoshank I died suddenly. Without its royal patron, the project was abandoned and the workmen's chisels fell silent. Worse, Shoshank's successors displayed a lamentable poverty of aspiration. They reverted all too easily to the previous model of laissez-faire government and were content with limited political and geographical horizons." Egypt's temporary renaissance on the world stage had been a false dawn. The country's renewed authority in the Near East withered away just as quickly as it had been established, end quote. The providential poetry of the entire tale is impossible to miss, and this is one of many examples, I believe, where a study of the ancient Near East and its histories and texts only enhances our appreciation of all that the biblical text tells us. Solomon, who wrongfully allied with and married into Egypt's royal family, ultimately had his empire overturned by Egypt, his capital stripped of glory by Egypt. Solomon, the only Israelite king to create an empire enhanced by marriages, had insurrection against him fostered by a king of Egypt who rose to power through marriages of the very same kind. And immediately after Solomon's empire crumbled and Jerusalem was humbled, the power of Egypt wanes. From this point, Israel will be divided until the 10 northern tribes will be lost. And as we learn of these events, we are meant to mourn the united first kingdom that might have been. But a study of the Egyptian history that is bound up with this tale can, I believe, foster faith in a God of history who will continue to watch over, instruct, save, and ultimately restore a Jewish Jerusalem generations into the future. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together with you next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.